we'll get to those. So let's see. There's a few initial considerations on the field. What it's boiling down to, the biggest concern here are these trees out there and the natural resource that they present. Some things I want to present to you guys. What constitutes natural resource and the preservation? What is the baseline for that preservation? Is it original prairie, or is it original savanna, pasture, transitioning woodlands, which is what it is right now, but in the past it has been something else, and not the very distant past either. Does preservation mean as is? Preservation and protection of something as it is. If that's the case, does that mean that's the actual highest and best situation for that land? And then the third thing, of course, is does residential development necessarily mean degradation? Would it mean a means to proper management and protection of natural resources? And that's the case we'd like to make. Preservation baseline. We found some interesting stuff. So, like I said, what is that baseline for preservation? We've got some aerial photographs here. 1933. Look at how far, well, if you remember that previous aerial, but look at the difference in the trees over there. That suggests that it was either a savanna or pasture at some point, or maybe even prairie. It's been transitioning over the years. 1950, not much different. 1960, not much different. For some reason, trees started growing more in 1970. 1994, it's starting to look like what it does now. And that's today. So just kind of give you an idea of how nothing is static out there. It's not like we're talking about an old growth woodland. There are some magnificent oaks out there, and Gary mentioned something about oaks being impacted. I don't believe any of these oaks are being impacted. Those are the prized trees, and that's why you want to be out there, and it's actually the trees, particularly the oaks, that have to draw for a piece of ground like this. There's a lot of undesirable stuff. There's a bunch of really ratty looking thorny honey locusts, which are really nasty, and there's also a lot of the eastern red cedars that are considered by the state as a nuisance tree that are kind of out of control because they are not fire tolerant, and back before all the farming and everything where fire would occasionally run through, the other tree species would survive and maintain their communities, and red cedar would struggle to approach. There wasn't that many, but now that the fire doesn't happen hardly at all, we've got this infestation of these red cedars. The other thing that's going on out there is pretty significant infestation of the invasive of multiflora rose and buckthorn and honeysuckle shrubs that squelch out under materials and even wildlife habitat to some extent. We'll get into a little bit more of that. And I think Jerry mentioned that Story County does not have a list of invasive species, but the DNR certainly does.
And have copies of that.
Yeah. And actually, there are, I think there's a slide that says something like there's up to 32 invasive species in Story County. But anyway, the trees are the drawing card here. They're not, it's not like Chris is wanting to come in and clear cut and just cram some homes in there. It's to create an environment of homes within trees, within this natural area, which will have a minimal impact on the environment and in some cases provide significant opportunity to improve it. I'm going to show you the same pictures, but just show you the plan over it. Show you how, what it would look like back then. And Chris, can you use that?
Yeah.
And there's something we came up with just last week, and I talked to Jerry about it, but it didn't get we just haven't been able to revise the preliminary plat fully yet. But that little cul-de-sac that goes to the north, we realized that if we got rid of that, it would be far less, but there would be a significant reduction in construction. We're not losing any lots there. That's that one larger lot, which is Chris's lot, would be a flag lot, but we wouldn't have to build a big cul-de-sac bulb in there, take out, you know, maybe a couple more trees there and maybe start. And it also reduces the need for the detention because it wouldn't keep detaining water for that cul-de-sac. So that was one of the positive changes that we made really just in the last week. But that's the 1933 version. You can see really there's only like four lots that are really fully in the trees. Doesn't change much there. Not much there either. But it starts filling out a bit there. Some of the same things that Jerry did and our response to it. The principle of generally discouraging development within these areas, unique circumstances. This is a unique circumstance. It is limited in its scope. Like Jerry mentioned, it's not really going to go north across the creek. It really can't go west because the creek pinches it down there, and it's into the east. There's 550 in that lot there, which isn't part of what Chris is even buying. But that's the floodplain. This is, really kind of a unique physical situation. It's not an old-growth woodland. The area is really infested with invasive plants. We're going to, as we go through this, I'll show you how we believe that development within this area can actually enhance it. I would like to point out that discouraging development does not. Does need to carefully look at it, which I feel like staff is doing. So principle number two, mitigate the impacts of proposed development. We're doing that. We're providing a means of that in the establishment of the preservation easement and various conservation projects that we're going to talk about shortly. Principle three, consider the natural resource areas for inclusion in greenbelt conservation or take necessary steps to something that are basically. We believe this project and what we're proposing establishes those other methods to the preservation easement, to the conservation projects, and the covenant controls. When we looked at it even this morning, Jerry, we're not necessarily opposed to putting a big chunk of it into it. GBC does allow crop agriculture, which can contribute water, and there's about 6 acres up there that's in row crops. That's going to get replaced with either, worst case scenario, pasture grass,
yep.
Which is better for water that won't be seeing the application of fertilizers.
Just put it back to the house.
So principle four, develop the site and performance standards. That's something that Ed, Jerry and Conservation are working on, but they have not yet been developed by the county. Yes, this is a project like this is kind of something that can get us started too. Just direction going there. Specific goals and how this plan will help preserve, protect, and restore and enhance quality of water. Restore natural and beneficial functions, wetlands and streams and so on. With what we're doing here, there's a greater potential to protect and enhance the creek corridors. The cost of protection and enhancement gets spread over the 17 owners of these lots as opposed to the current four. And in addition to that, there's going to be an oversight, homeowners association overriding the whole thing and managing the whole thing too. certain level of funds established for the preservation easement, or some kind of covenants and such. Objective 1.3, implement or encourage the implementation of stormwater best management practices. We're doing that. SUDOS, which is a statewide urban design specification standards, has some management guidelines and how we're approaching stormwater detention on the north side there. Covenants will encourage individual rainwater harvesting or rain gardens. Goal 2, to protect, restore, and enhance Story County's land, soil, and geological resources. There's some pretty significant terrain there. It's not where there's going to be any building, but there is some steep slopes, and will need some attention at some point. And like I said earlier, the fact that the financial base and burden will be spread over 17 owners and a homeowners association makes it easier. No construction will occur on slopes. They're all contained within the preservation easement. Goal 3, restore the natural diversity, dynamics, distributions, habitats, behavior, restore density, and plant animal populations. I'm not going to do all those things for you guys here. You're probably familiar with them enough. The project proposes a restoration of native vegetation covered in areas that are currently in pasture. Those are the areas along the north. But along the north and then the east side, all along the north side of the creek there, where it's just pasture now, and it starts rising up. Now, especially on the north, you see the ground rise up, and then it actually becomes woodlands when it gets higher. So what we're proposing there is to extend that woodlands down farther to slope. And so we're kind of still upland woodlands. And that would be...
Reforest
that north area. And add that into the preservation easement area. The invasive plant species, which is a problem statewide, a problem trying to go out there and look at the site, too. So, Chris, when I was out there Friday, I caught a But this will obviously the clearing for some of the construction, but the individual homeowners too will be controlling these invasive species. Now, because of the large lot size in the preserved areas, the homes added in this area will have little effect on animal patterns. And I think we all kind of pretty much know that anyway, that the deer are not bothered at all. Who is it that you talked to?
Well, even just the DNR report, Dana report, talks very clearly about that the deer actually perform very well in all environments. I have a lot of deer information.
Talk to the coons.
Not talk to them.
They definitely.
Yeah.
That, you know, the way I drive to work even when I go to this section of Johnson, that is probably very similar to this. So at some point, actually, it's much more dense, but there is a wooded area with me. Well, and I see basically the fox, I see coyotes, I see deer way too often. Of course, raccoons and possums and all that stuff, and owls and hawks and crickets. It's that 54th Street in St. Johnson. It's a wildlife area. Objective 3, restrict development with environmental sensitive, including floodplains, steep slopes, wooded areas, and wetlands. And again, in this case, the only thing we're dealing with is wooded areas, because we're not touching the wetlands. Floodplains or steep slopes are only to protect the natural biotech. Proposed among the trees, and as I mentioned earlier, it doesn't mean clear cutting, but the trees in the natural areas are what's drawing Chris and home buyers to this, and they're valuable to the buyers. They're going to want to protect them. There's going to be a real sense of ownership and pride of ownership that drives the protection of this. Objective 3.8, establish native energy cave communities along roadways and bridges. Well, we don't have a ton of opportunity to do that, but that's certainly something we can do. At like 550th on the west side slopes down to the creek, and that's something that you'll see later that we're proposing that would be naturalized. Well, we conduct environmental education. We would like to, with what we're proposing here and some of the conservation projects as part of this, to partner with educational institutions. Even help plan and design some of these projects and then monitor them and study for.
I was a DNR has extensive resources.
Yeah.
And the DNR as well has extensive things in Story County. There's some pretty neat programs out there that we sort of have programs for money and communities to help restore this area back to what it used to be.
Yeah. And, you know, even leave it open for even middle school or high school classes to come in and observe what's been done, how it's reacting, and it doesn't work, or you know, what's got to change.
Yeah, Ballard Creek that runs through there, it's a district named after that creek, so we need to have my kids and the Ballard kids out there to help study that creek and part of that.
Going back to the tree issue a little bit, yeah. Granted, some trees are going to have to be removed to make this work, but with the, we're not taking out more than 15% in any calculations what we're doing, but with what's required in the covenants for street tree planting and landscape trees, there's going to be significant tree mitigation there, and then that's not to mention what's going to get planted on the north side. Those on the north side are probably going to be smaller trees to start with and let it grow up. You know, and they'll have to be deer protection work in. But ultimately, I suspect we'll probably wind up with more trees than we are.
And the trees that are native to Iowa, the trees that are needed and should be in that area, not volunteer trees or scrub trees or invasive trees.
Yeah. Maybe more oaks or,
you
know, and what particularly on that north side, what's appropriate to that southern slope above the floodplain. There are problems out there. We've mentioned the invasive plant species, which they are, the big problem is that they do have that competitive advantage and they shade out other undergrowth.
They frankly fight for the nutrients that, like the big oaks, the 150-200 year oaks there, now having to compete against honeysuckle and multi flora rose, stuff that's not even generally supposed to be in Iowa, and now take it off the nutrients in the soil and the water and everything else.
Yeah.
The big oaks that actually legitimately state DNR, not just me saying this, but state forester, everybody else reports those are actually at risk if nothing's done for those to protect those big oaks.
And as we mentioned, you know, Story County does not have an official list of invasive species, but the DNR lists Story County's have 26 to 32 invasive plants. Animal depredation, we're concerned about habitat, but the animals are also problematic at times, especially when the deer herd is out of control, and I don't know, it's not out of control now, but it's huge. And Chris dug up a whole bunch of stuff on the deer population. There was a time, so what, 1800s, where it was almost gone.
1898, it was down to zero.
Yeah. And
brought back.
And then
it reached an all-time high. 2006, it reached an all-time high of 650,000 a year. It stabilized, it got over 5 minutes, they brought it back down with the DNR with more extra hunting seasons and extra tags and bring that down.
Gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to move along a little bit more quickly, please.
Which, by the way, I want to thank you guys for meeting at 4 o'clock, not at 6 or 7. Stream banking and slope erosion, it's just something that typically happens with streams when there's been either agricultural, which is primary case here, but you get to cut in erosion of the slopes of the creek. Solutions and opportunities presented here that gives us, as I mentioned earlier, because of the association and spread of ownership, the opportunity for appropriate management and to specify the use of native trees and shrubs within the landscape of spring trees. This species control, we already mentioned the feedback and slope projects, which I'll get to in a minute. All is facilitated by the Homeowners Association, the preservation easement, the pride of ownership, and broader financial resources. And Jerry, we have copies of the easement and other types of graphs in your package.
We'll highlight on some special projects that we're proposing to wrap this up.
So we talked about the special projects.
Let's go to that last slide.
Yeah, it's just implementation. I want to touch on this because these numbers are different than what Jerry quoted earlier. Yeah, it actually got better than the numbers in your report. We were actually impacting less because that cul-de-sac went away. And it actually increased some of the preservation in this area. Jerry showed you this earlier. Do you have any more questions on that? There's easements there for the preservation, and it's got some restrictions on what can be done, which is not very much within preservation. The county requires a stream easement, 30 feet minimum on either side of the creek, so they can get in there and continue. So that's shown there. The light green is like common open space, and the stuff that's in there, that's just where the detention's occurring. This color here is your natural resource area. This is what we're impacting of that. This is just graphic illustration of what's in that sheet. And then these areas here are what we're adding in addition to these. So there's really in the overall net loss of natural resource areas about 2 acres. Yeah. But this is what Chris wanted to get to. These are the conservation projects we're proposing with some time. But along here is where we're proposing the reforestation, which is now sloping pasture ground. Right here, well, actually, it's all row crop.
That's all row
crop. And this area of row crop would be converted to pasture grasses and crop and its associated nutrient issues. But right here is an opportunity to do a little bit of prairie restoration. That's pasture pretty much now. It's got some invasive non-native grasses in there. So that would be one project as well. The slope reinforcement here, there's some sloughing that occurs naturally here. It's not really an issue with the creek so much as it just is with the terrain itself, but some vegetative controls there would be extremely helpful, and it would to really help slow or prevent that erosion. What I mentioned earlier, the roadside needs seeding could occur right in here. And then the potential for some of the creek bank restoration, maybe in conjunction with some prairie restoration. Those are the various projects that really would make this a conservation community.
Ultimately, what we're committing to and what we're trying to show here is that we're trying to make this entire area better and actually add enhance your natural resources area and everything in that area. We want to add to it. We're not trying to take away. But having these homes, having people out there allows for more financial resources and more management to actually do this. If you look at the State Forest Report, which is 365 pages long, Forest Action Plan, I read the entire thing this weekend. It's actually a very good read. The DNR has a lot of great resources. It talks very clearly. I have the conclusion here if you guys want to pass that out, but the conclusion that they wrote, the state forester himself writes, he says, to highlight that no longer is it possible for Iowa's forests to remain untouched with invasive species and everything else involved in Iowa,
everything has to be managed and controlled by people and by proper conservation methods. It says no longer, and very clearly, it says no longer can you just leave it alone and do that. Paragraph 2 of this conclusion says that very clearly, and that's straight from the DNR state boards, or not Chris Gardner and playoffs. And that's what we're actually trying to do with ISU, with Ballard, with everybody. We want to make this area reforested. We want to be a net positive with development. We're not trying to take away and come in and be the big bad developer that just wipes everything out. I know that's a common conception, but that's clearly not the case here. We're committing, legally committing to doing this. So we're proud to do this. We want to be there. We want to take care of these trees.
Kind of sidebar here, this graphic may be somewhat misleading. We're showing these projects out here, but that does not mean that we're wiping out this area here. We're only taking really small portion. We're leaving lots of preservation area and trees.
Yeah, even though the individual lots themselves are going to be more of a natural lot, we have to look at different strains of grass, more of an annual ryegrass versus the Kentucky bluegrass. Kentucky bluegrass is not native to Iowa, so no Kentucky bluegrass allowed in the area. I mean, that type of level, strength of grass down to that level, is absolutely
dependent. So our conclusions, the woodlands are transitional. They're not old growth. They don't currently exist in their natural existing state. To leave the land as it is to ignore the problems. Many of the CTC objections are actually met by this particular posting. Habitats and travel quarters are not going to be impacted. Benefits mentioned greater personal stake and management and broader financial basis. These efforts that really could not occur otherwise. Controlling invasive species, all the special projects, and education.
They get both your names and business addresses for the record, please.
Yes, Chris Gardner, Bella Holmes, 506 East 1st Street. Huxley, Iowa.
And Bob Gibson, Civil Design Advantage, 3405 Southeast Crossroads Drive, in Grimes.
Thanks. Are there questions for the applicant?
I'm just curious. You have now showed that, you know, you guys have an intention to adhere to conservation methods in order to really try and make this a space that kind of supports the natural resources. And I definitely understand that, you know, development is an iterative process, but it seems like you're coming now to us in a very short time frame with some of these conservation changes. Is there a particular reason that they come so quickly and asked by Jerry first?
Partly is, yeah, it's been an iterative process with Jerry. And truly, this has been my plan the whole time. I had not understood or even imagined that this would be expected of me. I was just planning to do it the whole time. So it's not new to me, but it is new to lay it all out in detail and commit to it and put it on paper in a certain way. So that is new, the implementation of it. But the intent, that's always been my intent to reinforce that whole area.
One of the reasons we handed out the hard copy of this, it would be easy for us to stand up here and say a bunch of baloney, and then, you know, but now you have what we told you about it.
Hold that record on paper. Yeah. So, full on commitment. And me personally living there, personal there. It's not just a piece of film or a sales pitch. It's just what I want to do.
It's just taken the time since the initial submittal, initial meetings of action.
Back up to the slide that showed the additional improvements you're planning, conservation improvements.
That one?
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you plan to show those on the plat?
Yep.
Are you planning deed restrictions for those lots? Limiting development?
Oh, yeah. There's permanent deed restriction on the floodplain and on those lots, yes. Yep.
All of those outlets have a permanent restriction?
The
deed restriction.
The outlots?
Yeah, those three northern parts.
The northern lots. The lots where you show all the conservation improvements?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah, they could still want to allow a horse barn or something like that.
My only intent there is to have a couple horses.
Okay, let me cut to the chase.
Yeah.
How do we make sure that that's your intent now? You're offering these as grand conservation enhancements to the overall property. What assurance does anyone have that that will be that will be the case in 50 years?
Do you have to, wherever that took, you know, that's a permanent deed restriction or a 5-year action plan that has to, whatever that's needed, I'm more than willing to do it. That's my intent, is to, my wife and I's intent to live there for the rest of our lives, and that be an area of pasture and reforestation. And we're not planning to build houses there or live there at all.
And we could put documentation on the preliminary plat, the final plat, probably the developers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Whatever legal means to make that happen, I'm willing. That's my intent. So I'm willing to do that.
One of the concerns I have whenever a proposal is being considered where all the guarantees are offered through a homeowners association or a restricted covenant,
yes,
is that those can go away immediately with a vote of the homeowners association.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now, imagine after 21 years when they sunset, nobody thinks to renew them. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, permit deed restriction or developer's agreement, whatever that right terminology may have, because that is my intent, and then I'm happy to sign to that. I don't have intent to develop that in the future or nothing like that. So my intent is to make it better.
And all the easements are permanent easements.
Correct.
As well.
Yeah, absolutely. Permanent.
Other questions for the applicant?
Nothing's for you or not. Somebody give me a Reader's Digest version of, didn't the county staff has said if they're not recommending this?
Our recommendation on the rezoning and the plat is to not approve the test.
Okay.
But Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, this is not what they submitted previously. So this is something new.
It's still conceptually the same.
Right. Thing.
The more formalized and more detailed.
Yeah, the basic design didn't change. You know,
it's still a proposed road. They're taking away the cul-de-sac, but we still have 16 lots, 17 lots.
That's the draw. I mean, that's the watershed area. It's maybe it's like 2 feet above the floodplain. It's definitely a low-lying area. It's a wet area.
It's kind of cool.
Where Charles,
I mean, talking about the far north.
Yeah. Charles has a
bill where you're showing.
Yeah.
It's all very high.
We want to build on high ground. We can't put a house on the low ground.
What I would like to do is finish up any additional questions we have for the staff and the applicant. I would like to take a 5-minute recess, and then we'll start off with public comment. So is there anything that you'd like to get cleared up, just gathering the facts here? Anyone? Okay, let's take a 5-minute recess. We'll be back at 10 after. Let's bring the meeting back to order, please. If you have any comments you'd like to make about this proposal, would you please step up to the podium, state your name and address for the record?
I'm Joyce Hornstein. I live at 30501 Doe Circle in the Deer Creek subdivision in Huxley, Iowa. A couple questions I have. in general, and this map is helpful. You know, you talk about the development on the west side of the road. We don't talk about this. You're changing the zoning on this, and I really don't see where any of the plans presented for the subdivision relate to this site. And I should mention our property does butt up against this back lot line, so I'm very curious as to what the plan is, whether there's any covenants and that sort of thing on the back. I have lived in that area over 25 years. I do want to mention that the erosive properties of those soils are high, especially in the steep areas, and you know, any development that would occur needs to consider those things very carefully, because the land use for that soil type is best preserved under pasture or woodland. Some of the other wildlife that we've seen, the deer have been mentioned, but we have eagles that fly through there and do feeding on that stream. And, you know, the stream
meanders through here, and there's quite a bit of erosion in some of that area.
But there are blue herons, eagles, you know, pretty much anything that you'd find in any woodland, a lot of native birds. And I think it's not real clear why the zoning is being done in this whole parcel when the residential section is on the left. And so I guess those are my comments.
Other comments? Go ahead.
I'm Cindy Hildebrand, and I live at 574-39 250th Street, Ames, Iowa. I'm not a neighbor of this development. I'm here because I've been a resident of Story County for 39 years, and as it happens, I'm a landowner, and I've been doing the kind of ecological restoration that was discussed here, and I've been doing it since 1988. It's incredibly hard work. It's also expensive. More about that later. And during those 39 years, I've seen a lot of land use decisions made in Story County. Some of them have been good decisions, some of them not so good. And there's a lot of places where woodlands and fairly undisturbed creeks used to be where they aren't anymore. On the other hand, there's been some stuff saved. So I'm really interested in conservation, and so I follow conservation decisions in this county. And I was especially interested when the C2C process began. And so I think I attended at least 10 meetings, including public hearings. And what I kept finding out again and again, both from going to those meetings and from reading the results of surveys, is that when people were asked, what is your priority for this land use plan? What is important to you? And people had lots of opportunities to do that. I mean, one of the best things about the C2C plan, and I'm not surprised it won an award, is that people got asked again and again, what do you want? Because they wanted it to reflect public opinion. And people kept saying again and again, water and natural resources. Protect water, protect natural resources. And that's one reason, that's probably the biggest reason, that so much of the language in the C2C talks about protecting water and natural resources. That's what the public wanted again and again. So having been part of that process and having seen the plan finally come to fruition, I thought, I want to see what's going to happen now when land use decisions come up as a result of the C2C being in place. So I've been following land use decision agenda items. And I found out about this meeting. When I saw this agenda item, there were 7 links to the link. And I went through all of those documents. And I was so concerned that I said to my husband, I think maybe we should go down and take a look. So we drove down and looked at this land, what we could see of it from the public road, obviously. And I would like to second what was said about the white areas. The white areas look pretty wooded. And I was also reminded when we were down there that this is a creek area. We only looked in there and we saw the creek. I'm sorry I don't have a copy of this. This is a watershed map of that area. And looking at it is a reminder that the water from Ballard Creek goes into Skunk River. This South Skunk River is officially impaired, as we all know, which means it's seriously polluted. There's no way we can clean up the South Skunk River and get it off that impaired list unless we start protecting the water that goes into it from Ballard Creek and other places. And if you want to protect a creek, it's not helpful to put more impervious surface on it in the form of houses or more septic systems. But sometimes we do it. I have a house and a septic system myself, but I think we need to think carefully about where we do it and whether it's really necessary in the places where we decide to do it. I have some familiarity with easements also, because a lot of my land is in a permanent conservation easement that was donated to the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. And that easement is a strict easement, and once a year, without fail, they send out a professional trained easement monitor that walks every inch of the boundary and makes sure that nobody is violating that easement, especially us. And that's great. My husband and I entirely approve of that, because unless an easement is enforced, it's pretty well worthless. When I looked at the documents for this proposal, it was not clear to me how the easement would be enforced. Besides being regularly enforced and monitored, it also helps if the enforcement is done by an outside party. I mean, the Natural Heritage Foundation did not say to my husband and me, why don't you walk around and tell us if you're enforcing your easement? And maybe that would be done in this case, but I haven't seen the mechanism for that. It's different when you have an outside party doing it than when you have the actual landowner doing it. I say that as a landowner. Another thing about easements is you can prohibit things, but you can't require them. That's one reason that my husband and I are hoping to leave some money to the Heritage Foundation to help improve our land as we are doing now. You can say, don't do this, don't do this, but you can't say, you have to do this, you have to do this. So when I hear about these plans, I wonder how in the world they're going to happen. Are the only people who are going to be allowed to buy lots in this place, would they be people who are already committed to being willing to spend thousands of dollars on ecological restoration? Or would they be told that, you know, $1,000 a year or so are going to be taken and used for this? Who would be doing it? Who would be hired? Who would make sure it was done? I mean, all the questions that were brought up earlier, I also have. Also, when I looked at the actual language of at least one easement document, I was puzzled because, to give one example, they said native or naturalizing plants. Native and naturalizing are not two different words from the same thing. They are opposite. A native plant is indigenous to the area. A naturalizing plant is one that makes itself at home whether it belongs there or not. A lot of our invasive and exotic species are wonderful at naturalizing. So when I see a native or naturalizing ground cover, I think, huh? Conservation developments are something else that I have some familiarity with, and that also puzzles me. There may be different kinds of conservation developments I don't know about, but the ones I'm familiar with focus on clustering houses on the most disturbed area, so you're disturbing the least amount of land, and then everybody has a big natural area that they can enjoy in common that doesn't have buildings on it. That's the kind that I know about. I think that's the kind that maybe is most common. This concept of spreading out houses on large lots doesn't quite fit what I know about them. And finally, I'd just like to read what was written, a few of the words that were provided about this, the original proposal by the County Conservation Board. This is an essential environmental corridor with native wildlife and plant functions, as well as essential water quality functions. Very few greenbelt corridors exist in Story County. I agree that we must allow for residential developments in the county, but I cannot support those developments when they negatively impact areas we have designated as important natural areas. Comprehensive plan goals NRR 3.5-7 specify that we protect our resources, minimize impact, and restrict development in sensitive areas. These objectives, coupled with our NRA Natural Resource Area guidelines, leads me to the foregoing conclusion. We must support what we state in the comprehensive plan. Thank you.
Other comments?
Thank you. My name is Brenda Brink, 29514 U.S. Highway 69, Huxley. I'm familiar with this area. I don't live on it, as some people do here, but I'm very familiar with this area, as we've lived in the area quite a while. And I have the same concerns as the people have spoken already. I see this land. I used to do more running, and I would run this 550th Street. It's very steep. It's very erodible. Ballard Creek is all part of our watersheds. My watchword these days is water. We don't have to look very far. We don't have to look very far and to realize that we're taking our water for granted. taking our water for granted. And to put a development in doesn't help the water here, because any development will start that erosion going. I don't think that there's any way that the plans for conservation make a lot of sense, because, like she said, very time-consuming, very expensive, and a homeowners association can simply decide it's too expensive. We don't want to pay that. So I'm in support of the C2C plan. My understanding, and I'm kind of new to the C2C plan, is that it's fairly recently, and I was prompted to come because I thought, why are we amending it already? I feel like there's so much power in precedent, and so if we're going to amend it right off the bat for something like this, that sets a bad precedent, and that's my concern there.
Quick, I'm Scott Hornstein, 30501 Doe Circle, the other half of the choice there. Mine is a question, maybe doesn't even need future. I had a,
obviously, knowing this road is about 200-300 feet of gravel road, is this also going to be hard surface? I think I heard that this was going to be hard surface. Do you know if the county is, right now, all I'm saying is this road right here, it has frost boils, it's closed. It's been closed in the past. It has all the traffic from Deer Creek. There's no shoulders. The woods grow over the woods, over the road. I'm just saying, this is with only the access here, and a single lane bridge that goes over the creek there, that floods sometimes, it's a bit closed. I sure would push just as a positive to the people, if this moves forward to building out there, is try to somehow get something out there with improvement to that 200-300 yards, whether we all pay for it, it's something that makes it attractive for people to get from that city, you know, edge to there. And if the city has not been approached with septic system or to, you know, to their sewer, I don't know if that has been done or not. Probably has, and the city has said no. I mean, okay. I mean, it'd be a positive, obviously, to have that done, I think. As a homeowner buying out there, to have that hooked to the city would be a big plus, you know. And a little bit of that road. I mean, I would not stop pursuing that if you move forward with it. Yes. Thanks.
Other comments? Going once, going twice. Okay, Planning Commission, what are your thoughts?
I guess since this is my first day at school, I'm inclined to go with what has been recommended to us. It's so cool what you want to do, but given my limited experience, I would definitely appreciate that you did that you do have a plan
for conservation and that you do have ideas and desires, and that this revision was made to help improve that. I still agree with the public comment that was made about revising and quickly revising the new plan before we've had a chance for the county and the different agencies to fully engage with it and get maps updated and get things caught up to it. So there are many different concerns and desires in this area. And it's possible that you could find 20 people to buy houses that are all conservation minded. But I don't believe that's in the nature of development.
What?
No. We've got to build and we've got to develop somewhere. And basically, I think in the home building industry, above ground, we need to call it above ground. The ground can't be farmed. I know that's not necessarily true. People want to live. And to me, that's a better situation than taking agricultural ground and giving it above ground. I think with the right safeguards, that can be done. I think that they have gone to a lot of trouble here and a lot of money. Or we just quit building. Gotta build somewhere. I would rather see it above ground than I would on low ground.
Gary, did we get any feedback from the city of Huxley on this?
Yeah, I think that the city administrator responded that there's providing water.
That's right. That's right. I don't know that I have a lot to add. I'm a little concerned just on the focusing on the rezoning part about the size of the rezoned area relative to the size of the subdivision. I'm also share your concerns about what's the planning effort for if we immediately amend it about there being a clear oversight of something that was just missed in the plan. And I think that the County Conservation Board's input on this says that there's not a clear oversight, not a clear plum on the plan designation. So
I have another question.
Yeah.
What is the intent of the plan on the east side of the... What's the intent with that piece of property?
Yeah, the east side. So, just to be clear.
Chris, you want this?
Yeah. What I'm proposing to buy is this. So this east side here, start with this house here, and then this is Bill Robs and this Crash Earth. And then, those are not part of this. That's why.
Not part of your proposal.
Correct. But I'm
part of this text.
Yeah. But this is all one parcel right now. But I'm
part of the settlement.
I'm buying a part of the parcel. But I have to, that's why the zone is larger than the broader spectrum, just because it's not split yet. I guess it's there.
But you're just following parcel lines with your rezoning proposal.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not a, I'm not buying that. There's no intent to build there or anything like that. To answer, that was one of your questions. So that's no intent, nothing would change there. So that's still owned by someone else. Yeah.
Chris, is there anything built in? Documentation to limit further division, because again, these two are separate lots, numbered lots.
not in our.
Would there be anything proposed to limit future division of those?
That would be handled on a future. If someone tried to else try to buy that, or one thought that'd be handled at a future applicant or not.
You are one.
Our job is to think about the future. So we are rezoning.
If there was a better way to rezone it and do that,
The proposal before us is to rezone all of those parcels. And to redesignate all those parcels. Yeah.
Not proposing to change the plan. That's there. We're following the guidance we actually need.
Other than the designations of those areas as natural resources and then developing them.
It says discouraged and say prohibited.
I understand.
Wait a minute. You submitted an application that specifically proposes a change in the plan designation for all of that property.
Currently zoned A1.
So just to be clear, I mean.
Sorry, I'm talking about the C2C plan.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay.
We're talking about the same thing.
Yeah. And corresponding zoning change as well. So that's the question before us that we have to answer first. Is the zoning and plan designation change? If any of you in a motion would like to separate those two, I think that would be completely appropriate, or you can take them in a motion. Staff report dealt with them in one as one thing. And then we will do a separate motion for the preliminary plat, the subdivision plat.
Please explain that first part a little bit more to me.
Okay. We have two documents that are proposed to be changed.
Okay.
One is the zoning code, which is the actual legislation and the development rules, and the other is the long-term plan for the area. Both, they have to be, they have to correspond with each other. They have to fit with each other, so they're proposing amendments to both. Hard to do one without the other, so if you'd like to take that in one motion, you can, but if any of you feel like that's important to separate the two, we can do that as well. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
We have a motion.
Make motion to follow the recommendation of staff and deny the rezoning 02-16 and subdivision 13-16 as designated by staff. And because of, and I want to make sure that these reasons are passed along when this recommendation is given to the county board. Because it's not aligned with the C2C plan outlined as of the protection of the waterway and the green belt and the wildlife corridor that is there. Understand the benefits that are provided and possibly I'll end my motion there.
Okay. We have a motion corresponding with staff's recommendation. Plus an asterisk of two. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Smith, a second by McBride. Motion or discussion on the motion? Certain that the staff can pass if this motion goes forward, I'm sure staff could pass along your comments.
Yeah.
I think that it would be a wonderful idea for any of us, always, for any member of the commission to attend the Board of Supervisor meetings also. But technically, probably not hard to forward that along with the motion.
Right, I understand.
Okay. Any other discussion on the motion? Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Holster.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, the motion carries, and your next move is to the Board of Supervisors. Thank you. Thanks for everybody attending a long meeting and for your public comments.
Aaron, do you feel that you need to take action on
the gosh, I'm sorry. Yes, we need to take action on the plat. Do we have a motion on the subdivision plat?
About the zoning, what you propose can't happen, but is that the record is probably subject to the section 2?
Yes.
My motion was for the rezoning and the subdivision combined.
It was? Okay. The motion was for both.
No compromise.
I don't know how you incorporate that into what's incorporated in the motion. Is everyone comfortable with that, the combined motion? Okay, I want to make sure we have that straight. Okay. All right, we move on to consideration of the agritourism farm ordinance. And Emily, as I turn this over to you, I want to clarify. Now, are we so we are asked to take action on this tonight?
Yes.
Yeah,
you are.
Not work section work.
No, hopefully not. Hopefully not.
Okay, not the first time we've been here.
That's right.
Really, we talked about this before. Okay.
Go ahead. You can start.
Oh, okay.
If you want.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. So this is, we've talked about, Amelia has presented on this a couple different times to you, so I know you're very familiar with the ins and outs of the ordinance and some of the issues we have discussed. Just a quick overview, we discussed it at our November Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, and the commission recommended that we amend the conditional use permit process for the retail and or novelty farms to include the supplemental standards. So that was presented to you at the December meeting. And in the December meeting, there's discussion on the proposed definition and also on the term novelty and what that potentially brings to the conditional use permit. What could potentially be brought forward in an application for a CUP. Thus, we are proposing to rename the conditional use permit, the conditional use from retail or novelty farm to agritourism farm. We also made some changes to the definition. We took out the part that said the retailer or novelty farm would enhance livestock production. We took that part out and really related it back to why it needs to be in the rural setting, why it needs to be on a farm instead of being in a commercial area or within the city limits. So our amendment section, our proposed amendment to the definition includes that the agricultural setting or crop and or livestock production is indispensable to the activity or product. And goes on with the definition that's currently in our code of ordinances. So the conditional use permit process then, I'm not going to go through the current process if that's okay with you. I'm just going to trust that we've been over that before. But the proposed amendment to the conditional use permitting process would be the addition of this written narrative. that really gets down into how this promotes the county's rural character, that the agritourism farm should not alter or detract from the original use of or the primary crop or the production use. The agritourism farm is accessory in size and operation. Existing buildings should be used to their full potential, and before any new buildings are added, the hours of operation should meet compatibility criteria for the total estimated hours of all daily traffic. And then how the applicant plans to negate any negative impacts on neighboring properties or crop or livestock production. So also any unreasonable dust from gravel drives, parking areas, or excess traffic on the county roads due to we want a statement on how that's not going to affect neighboring properties. So then, in addition, we'd ask the applicant to submit a dust control plan, if determined necessary, a sanitary facilities plan, an overflow parking plan, which Amelia spoke in good detail about, an emergency plan, a certificate of evidence showing the property owner has liability insurance, and then making sure that they are complying with other regulations, including food service and processing. So the proposed amendment to the conditional use table would be adding agritourism farms, and then indicating that there would be supplemental standards in the A1, A2, commercial light industrial, and the high industrial districts. The proposed amendment to the parking ratios would include agritourism farm. This is an addition to the parking table, and that would be one space for 200 square feet of enclosed area and one space for every 1,000 feet of outdoor activity area. So in addition to this, we kind of looked at how this might impact the home business portion of our ordinance. We wanted to add in that if an agritourism farm use is small enough and has minimal impact to the neighbor, it might be considered a home business. Likewise, we also added to the conditional use table that if a home business does not meet the requirements under the Chapter 89, that we might be able to take it through the conditional use process. We also made one change to the standards of approval for home business, and that is it shall not create traffic or delivery concerns in the immediate area. In combination, all home business activities shall not generate traffic substantially in excess of 6 trips a day per person living in the household. This is just to help us kind of quantify what substantial impact might be. So then here's the proposed amendment in terms of home businesses to the conditional use permit table. And as you can see, it just states that home businesses that cannot meet the requirements set forth in Section 89.01, home businesses would go through the conditional use permitting process and there would not be supplemental standards to those. So, based on the discussion, removing the word novelty from the title of the use, and really focusing on tying the agritourism use to the farm, the original farm use, the crop production or livestock production, you can consider the following alternatives. Staff recommends alternative 1, which would be to recommend approval of the proposed agritourism farm and home business ordinance amendments to the Story County Board of Supervisors. Any questions?
Can you go back to slide 17?
Thank you for remembering.
What is the GBC on the
Greenbelt Conservation?
Greenbelt Conservation, okay. And
where you've indicated the letter C, that's where currently are those all of the zoning districts where a home business is currently allowed, or does it apply to A2 and the others as well? But I guess what I'm getting to is there's a difference between this slide and the prior slide for the CUP revision as far as which zones they apply to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious as to why there's not like a one-to-one ratio or a...
Yeah, like exclusive or...
Can you go back to 13?
Yeah, so you cover A1, A2, CLI, HI.
Right.
Right, with the CUP. And that part makes sense to me.
A home business, so the home business section is not really related to the agritourism. The home business section, we have, we allow home businesses in the AR district, in the R1 and the R2 district, and the residential manufactured home district. But we wouldn't necessarily allow farm retail novelty uses in those districts.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
That was my question.
Okay.
There's question two. Okay.
Amelia will be happy.
Amelia.
Well, they both look quite a bit. So Amelia's worked a lot on it.
The definitions, and I think some really good improvements to the text. I think that in the supplemental standards, that the emergency plan is a requirement that you have to fully utilize existing buildings first. Might be a touch over the top, but they're asking for something really special here. I mean, you're asking for a commercial use in an agricultural place, and so maybe it's okay for it to be somewhat stringent. I wonder how you're going to, you know, determine what using a building to its full capacity is, unless it's an obvious excessive move to build a new building.
I'm okay with that kind of ambiguity.
You like that?
I'm okay with it because it allows some judgment and discussion. I mean, that's what we're here
for. Which is what the CUP process is for.
Is to have the discussions and identify the differences between case one and case two. This is how this one's different than that one that we, you know, either approved or didn't approve last month.
On the emergency plan part, would you interpret that to mean that an automated external defibrillator is required, or you're just requiring that the plan would address all those things if they choose to include that sort of equipment?
Probably if they so choose to include that.
It's just a laundry list of things that
could be
an emergency plan should outline.
Okay. So there's no specific requirements for what needs to be included in the emergency plan? No, I don't think that this requirement.
And different types of CUPs would have, would dictate kind of those different requirements.
Sure.
And that's where, if it came before us, then we could say, have you thought about, or, you know.
This application that includes, but when it says includes, that means all of those things after that will be included. Am I reading that wrong? There could be more stuff. We're not going to limit it to that, but...
I suppose one could say the location of those things, well, we've chosen not to provide them.
Well, we could say may include.
And then we have some discretion, depending on what the application is and what they're proposing to do.
Because the word include means they'll be
there. Yeah, we could say
other things
may
other
include.
Than might, what might be listed, or maybe some of these things may not be applicable.
Yep. Other questions for staff?
I have a question. It may not be related to this exactly, but let's say you had a farm operation and you were putting out of a business, so put in a take a special permit, home business probably, permit, a location permit, which is an internal review, $50. Have a tea in 2 days.
But you'd be limited on what you could do under that home business.
There are standards that you have to meet. There's some discussion about limitations, traffic,
buildings,
employees.
Yeah, employees. Some employees. No outside storage.
Right.
So,
but this amendment also, on the other hand, allows someone who wants to do a larger scale, say, auto home business, to go through the conditional use permitting process. And correct?
Only if it could be defined as a
There's different types.
An
antique tractor restoration.
Yeah.
That potentially.
Yeah.
I'm not picking on Aaron right now, but maybe I
pick away.
No, just a question. I'm just going to use some examples of he raises goats, which is okay in agriculture. Now he sets up a business to rent goats out. It might. If I think part of it is looking at, are you going to bring the general public to your property? And if you are, how are they going to access your property? Where are they going to park? Do we need to think about restrooms? What's the effect or the impact on inviting the general public or allowing the general public to come to your property to access whatever service or resource that you're providing?
Which he would not be doing, probably.
Right.
Like if I wanted to rent my horses out to somebody. So now I'm going to rent them out for a weekend. But you're saying as long as I don't generated multiple vehicle trips that were out of the ordinary, then
yeah, we'd have to, would that be something that would fall under home business? They're only permitted in certain districts to begin with. Each district identifies whether or not you can do a home business. So they're not permitted in every district. A1 is permitted.
What do you mean by districts,
Jerry? Zoning
districts.
A1, A2. As a permitted accessory use, so you have to have a principal permitted use in an A1, whatever that might be, whether it's crop, livestock production, single family dwelling, stable. And then we have a list of permitted accessory. Home business would be an accessory use. And then the residential. A2 is a permitted accessory. AR, agricultural residential. R1. So that could be potentially a home business.
But I think the important thing is that you measure it on impact, not on a category. Like you don't say all hairstylists must have home business with it. They'll start generating.
We try to follow the standards that are set up in the ordinance for home businesses.
All right, other questions for the staff? Are there questions or comments from the public?
My name is Steve Black. My address is 32835 610th Avenue, Cambridge. I guess I wish I'd been here back in November. I had no idea you guys were doing this, and I just happened to see on the agenda, so I thought I'd put my input in. I like some of the changes. They're pretty good with the taking away the novelty. Agritourism is definitely a thing. But I guess I wasn't paying attention to the slides. Can you go back to one that has the definition of the only question is when I read it, the new thing you have on there, it seems very not really certain what the indispensable part is referring to, the activity or the original part. So it feels like it's very open to interpretation, and that can sway a long ways one way or the other in the future. For instance, in 2008 when I came, the board I spoke to was totally different. None of you guys were there, and what they agreed on and now and what we agreed on now was different. And what I'm concerned is if you go back in 10 years and I come back in the future and I would go back to the same thing, as how would they interpret it in 10 years? So
what's your concern about the wording?
I don't know what that really means. What's indispensable? The activity, the product, or to the heritage, or to the common practice? What
the agricultural setting. So if you're applying for this, a CUP would apply to a specific lot, right? So let's use your site as an example, right?
Right.
So the business that your CUP, that the agricultural setting where the crop, where the livestock production is indispensable to the activity or product. So you're applying to allow to use your property for an additional use.
And
that is, sorry, is that correct or is that?
Well, what's black in writing there is existing language, and what's proposed
correct.
For changes in red. So that's existing language.
Right.
Right. So
The red part is the part where it says indispensable to
the agricultural setting.
Well, you can read it several ways, is my, because I've read it several ways and I don't understand what the indispensable part is.
I don't think that's the right word.
Indispensable. I mean, that's critical. That's necessary. That's must have that to make the other one work. But what are the two things that have to make it work to have? And what are you really saying? I guess I don't know what is it really saying. Is I don't really know what the ultimate.
I think it gets to the focus of this is either agricultural production or livestock production or activity. I mean, that should be the focus of the.
Trying to make a stronger tie to agriculture.
Right.
So you can't just take something that you would normally be only allowed in a commercial district and plop it out in the country and say it's a agritourism because it's in the country. It's agritourism because the thing you're doing or wanting to do has to take place in an agricultural setting or be associated with agriculture in order to make it work.
So do you read that when you read the statement?
We'll give you a definition in Webster's here.
I do.
That's how you guys gather, because I don't gather it that way. And my question is like, when I come back in 10 years, you guys probably won't be here, and I will be.
Good question, because we talk about the language so much that you start to lose focus on it.
Because you guys are used to it, and you've heard it several times, and you know what the meaning is. And I looked at it for the very first time, and I don't understand what that really means.
We're going to give you a definition here in a minute.
Sure.
I know that hinges on the word indispensable. I think it where it gets confusing is agricultural setting or crop and or livestock production.
Yeah, that gets a lot too. Yeah.
But you gotta use the focus.
It's gotta be there to make it
use the word or the core.
What if you just said agricultural setting or agricultural activity?
I think you could say either agricultural setting or production, even.
Because you have product.
You can even narrow it. You don't even necessarily have to say crop or livestock, because that's all agricultural-based.
So I would say,
like, you can condense it.
I'm going to give this a try, and then you guys can take it or leave it. But for the red, for what is in red, what I would revise that to is such that the agricultural setting, comma, crop, comma, and or livestock production, comma, is indispensable to the requested activity or product. That's clearer?
Let me write that down.
Or indispensable to the activity or product proposed.
Yeah, the proposed activity or product.
So, indispensable, as defined by Webster Dictionary, is not subject to be set aside or neglected, or absolutely necessary.
So I think the word is indispensable is good. It's just what part is indispensable?
Right.
That's the thing. Is it the activity? Is it the agriculture product? Or
setting, comma, crop, comma, and or.
I think you could just say agricultural setting or agricultural production of the site. Indispensable to the activity of product.
Or livestock production.
I would just say agricultural production.
I think legally you have to differentiate between the agricultural and livestock, don't you?
The state uses the definition farm in its legislation applying to the county zoning, so I...
But we are talking about two different things, right? The use of land and then animals, livestock?
We have a separate definition for agricultural crop production and agriculture livestock production.
Oh, I see.
We have
That's
two
why
separate
included both.
Definitions.
Okay.
There's, right? Agricultural settings. I think it gets confusing with all the ors.
It's the and or.
Yeah.
I think the setting, comma, crop, comma, and or.
So really, okay, so it just to be, okay.
And then to the, and for activity and product, to
proposed.
The proposed activity or product. That would clarify it for me.
Keep the word indispensable?
I would.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. He doesn't have a problem with the word.
No, the word's fine.
That make it clear?
Yeah, just what is
okay.
What part is indispensable?
What?
That's what I was
questioning,
okay. What's indispensable?
Yeah.
And what is it indispensable to?
That's
right, correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the other thing, whereas to, for somebody who's going to apply new, it makes it really hard for somebody who's going to apply. So picture somebody who's really small and just wants to do something. Your list of things doesn't even pertain to them. Most when I read that, I feel like that's all pertains to me. And unfortunately, I hope it's unfortunate, but in the county, there's probably never going to be another place like mine. In the state of Iowa, there's probably not another place like mine. So to have that stuff listed in there for a requirement for somebody else, you have some very detailed things that pertain to me, but they don't pertain to somebody who's just going to have a 2-acre pumpkin patch.
What do you see in there that's specific?
The safety plan, like all that stuff on there. If you have 20 cars pulling your lot, I mean, I understand the safety plan, but what are the odds that, I mean, you're going to have a terrorist come in or have an AED? I have an AED and we've never used it. I had to spend good money on that thing, not because it... I spent it because I wanted to make sure I had it in case someone had a heart attack. We have it right there. But the average person, that's $1,300. No one's going to spend that kind of money.
That's actually not a requirement.
Right. But when you list all that stuff out, you know, as a new person applying for these things, all your new things you apply for, it makes it really, it makes it a big challenge based on the scale. Like, but that stuff scaled up for me, and there's no one else that really does that stuff. It's just something to keep in mind. That it makes it really hard for somebody else to apply and to actually do these things in the county. So that's all I have to say.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
I think that's a reasonable point, but I also would say that's a nice part about the way you structured it, so that you have whole business. And if you can keep it to this scale, then great, your whole business. But just be aware that there's this threshold, and once you cross the thresholds, you've got to be taking it seriously, and you've got to be planning ahead. And I think that's exactly what we want to promote.
I think that's the idea that we came up with why we're tying these two together, why we're modifying the CUP process in conjunction with modifying the home business, is because we want to make some things easier and then some things more clearly defined.
I want to muddy the waters on that. Language just a little bit more. Yeah,
for the record, though, we have two amendments so far. Is that correct?
The language that you're working on right there, like, I think it's fair. We've been messing with this language so much. And Mr. Black and PJ, who are looking at it for the first time, go, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
It's fair for us to break that down a little bit. So, one thing that I think is missing is that the agricultural setting and the crop or livestock production of the site or upon the site is important. Because I don't want somebody coming in and saying,
like, we use the word property or parcel or
whatever.
How is it could be a portion of a parcel or
how is the CUP, what is the CUP tied to? Is it tied to the parcel?
Parcel.
So the
property.
Whatever the CUP, whatever definition the CUP applies to, is what I would use it.
Because I think a site can be a portion of a parcel or a property. may not be the entire.
You could imagine somebody buying tiny little acreage and not conducting any of their own agricultural production, but saying, what I'm going to do here is, it's critical that I be surrounded by all this. You know, but the point here is that it's supposed to be tied to a farm, to an operating farm. I think.
So, you would...
Something connected on the site.
So, you were suggesting that...
Well, yeah, but so you're in support of site or parcel?
I go property. We know what it means.
Okay.
I don't know.
We use the word site in our environmental provisions, and I think that's confusing because I don't know if that means a portion of the parcel, like this 64 acres. When we talk about site, are we talking about the entire thing or a part of it? Well, you may see
agricultural setting. That's why I asked, what is that in what is this EP? What terminology does it use?
Parcel. It's tied to the parcel.
And say the parcel. If that's what you're granting it for,
that's, yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong. I know there's no motions on the table here, but what we're heading toward is, in this particular instance, is such that the agricultural setting, comma, or crop production, comma, and or I think we move out the and, or livestock production conducted on the parcel is indispensable to the activity or product being proposed. Yeah? Anyone?
I think that's it.
Okay. Wordsmith by committee.
Other discussion.
Do you think we've done enough to tie the home business with an ag activity, that we're not talking about just any type of home business with what we're doing here in Pennsylvania?
I didn't think the home business was restricted to an ag-related activity.
It's not, but...
Oh.
And I think that's part of the...
But I'm just talking about with what we're working on here.
Yeah, well, okay.
I think as long as you've got the home business standards that are universally applicable, there's no the nature of...
Could be anything and everything.
Yep.
But I just want to clarify the question there, that this allows home businesses that don't meet, unrelated to agritourism, home businesses that don't meet the home business standards to apply for a CUP.
So you want to run a non-ag related business as a home business, but it's going
to exceed. I think that's where the connection has to be with the ag. And I thought that that's why.
But then if the home business.
That's why it was proposed by them.
If the home business could be defined as agritourism farm, then the supplemental standards apply.
What are the supplemental standards?
The written narrative, the emergency plan. Just read this. So this is under, this is what we've added to our whole business section. It's kind of at the very beginning of the whole thing. A conditional use permit shall be obtained for a home business that does not meet the following standards of approval in conformance with the zoning districts where home business is permitted. In the case that the home business can be defined as an agritourism farm and does not meet the following standards of approval, a conditional use permit shall be obtained and specific criteria for submittals of petitions for an agritourism farm met in conformance with the zoning districts where an agritourism farm is.
There's a connection to ag, and that's what I was asking about. So that's why it says if it's not a home business, then it could be a CUP.
But the intent is to allow home all sorts of businesses that exceed the limits of home business to apply for a general CUP. That
right.
Is the intent.
Right.
I agree.
But I think this paragraph talks about, you know, if it's not something that's going to fit in as a home business, then it could be a CUP, but it's an ag-related activity.
I think there are two separate things there.
There should be.
That a home business can be defined as an agritourism farm and does not meet the following standards of approval or conditional use permit shall be obtained and specific criteria for submittals and petitions for an agritourism farm met in compliance with the zoning districts for an agritourism farm.
So that's the second part that ties to the A. But the first part is specific to any, well, is broad to any home business.
So all you're doing is saying that an agritourism one kicks to supplemental standards.
So I think this is what we connected with, like, the farm, the barn wedding venue. We said if they want to go through the CUP process and use that as a home business, but they're actually bringing people, more people in, is that following?
I'm okay with
that. I'm okay with the wording as in all those sections.
I just thought we were tweaking it to allow the larger ones to still go through the CUP process, egg-related. And it still allowed the process for other types of, you know, engine repair.
That's what I see that it does.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, like, my neighbor, Hilker Small Engine Repair on George Washington Carver. But that'd still be allowed. It'd be a CUP. It's not agriculture-related.
Oh, we're okay.
Yes.
I think it does what we want it to do.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll find out the first time somebody calls.
Yeah.
We have two amendments.
So we have two amendments to what I presented here. One is to rephrasing that section and the definition. And the second is in the emergency plan section, saying may include emergency access routes, location. Anything else?
Do we have a motion?
I can make a motion to approve the recommendation that the planning and zoning staff gave us with the inclusion of the two amendments.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Discussion on the motion. I wonder if, Emily, you could read that one sentence back to us, just so we all know what we are.
Yes.
Acting on. She'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, I would be happy to do that.
If it's this done, I'm sure she would be.
Okay, such that the agricultural setting, comma, crop, comma, and or livestock production conducted on the parcel is indispensable to the activity or product proposed.
That is so close, but I thought that after crop, the word production was going to be included.
Crop production, okay.
It's a bit redundant, but okay. I think it doesn't separates them into individual.
Okay.
So you know, I have one more question.
Yeah.
Now that we've
discussed
now that we've clarified it so that I'm applying for this agritourism business, and what I want to do is I want to set up I raise livestock, and I want to set up a roadside fruit stand. Right? Read back through that, and it says that the agriculture crop or something conducted on this parcel, livestock's not related to a fruit stand, and I'm not raising the fruit on the parcel. Is that still allowed?
I would say no. Because they're all individual things. So you've got to meet one of the three one of the three has to be essential to your...
So I can't buy... My 16-year-old kid can't set up a roadside fruit stand, even though we go through the process, and sell... They glean from all our neighbors, or, you know, they collect fruit and food from our neighbours.
Couldn't that be a
sell it?
Though? I mean,
if it's, but if
it's a huge scam.
Let's say they're successful.
Yeah.
How about such that the existing agricultural setting crop production
is consistent with? Is
I so...
Do you know what I'm,
no,
do you know what I'm
I
saying?
Think, I think the answer to your question is no. It wouldn't be allowed. You can't go glean berries from all your neighbors. The point is, you gotta remember, this is a commercial operation that you're sticking out in the country. So there has to be a good reason for sticking it out in the country. There are commercial districts.
I'm surrounded by people that raise fruits and vegetables, and I'm going to sell, I don't want to just sell corn, which our neighbor on the left sells, I want to sell corn and pumpkins, which neighbor on the right sells, or neighbor on the right grows.
My opinion is no, it needs to be produced on site.
I think we have language somewhere there that talks about roadside stands, and that's kind of what we're trying to find right now.
That's just one example.
The issue isn't roadside, the
type of business.
The issue is,
does it have to be, does my business could be 100% farm related?
Right. Where is it coming from?
But it's not a product that I actually grew.
But then grocery stores are 100% farm related. They aggregate farm products and sell them. So that's, to me, that's not what we're trying to accomplish with an agritourism farm, is an aggregation of farm products and resale.
So if I grow corn and I sell corn, but I also sell my neighbor's strawberries, I'm selling something from my site, but also not from my site.
I think that's well within the scope that the Planning Commission addressed.
Okay.
You know?
Absolutely. We got it. We're happy with ambiguous language, and then we made it really specific.
I'm with you, bud.
Well, yeah.
We're doing this because we want to make it easier in most cases. And we're making it easier in most cases by refining the language for the home business. But then we also need to differentiate.
I don't think it's that specific. I think maybe my intent for it is different than someone else's intent. But to me, it cuts right to the intent of the code, or of the whole point of the thing, which is, if it's a commercial use, there's lots of commercial places to sell.
Right.
If it's fundamentally an add-on to a farm, then we can talk about it.
We did add to what we are amending here. It says...
Under the criteria for submittal, so that's supplemental standard.
It says the agritourism farm use is accessory in size and operation and is ancillary to the primary crop and or livestock production use. So it has to be connection to private. Some of the ordinances say like 50% or a certain percentage has to be grown or raised on site. I think we had discussions about that, but this is what we ended up with.
All right.
Letter C. 90.121C.
All right, we have a motion on the table. Is
there
Yeah, it's to approve it as by staff with the two amendments as stated.
Yeah.
And the amendments would be to that sentence, and then the other amendment was
the emergency plan.
The emergency plan saying may.
Okay. We need a roll call on this, please.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Motion carries. Recommend approval.
What is all of this?
See, it's been some long nights, but just think of the long nights we're saving ourselves in the future.
We have to thank the general public for their input.
Yeah,
Okay, wait, there's one more thing before we get out of here.
We do have one more agenda item, work program items.
It's going to be quick and sweet, 2017 work program. Every year, planning and development staff meets with planning and zoning commission board supervisors to come up with a list of things that we need to work on. Outside of the normal day-to-day activities that we have, we've got 7 things that are carried over from 2016. Over half of those are spinning right now, being worked on, ready to go to the next steps. We have several things, primarily from the C2C comp plan. We've got a lot of work to do. We're excited about that. We're also excited about the fact that we're hiring another planner to help us with some of these things. And then at that meeting, grading permits was added. Planning staff had had one discussion with the engineering department about it, kind of laid the groundwork for it. I think there's going to be several more discussions about it to try to figure out what it is that we're really trying to regulate. But that's number 16 that we're suggesting be added to the 2017 work program. What we're after is a motion from the Planning and Zoning Commission. And then, two, we're going to take this to the Board of Supervisors when we do our quarterly report next week. Any questions?
And we talked about a lot, most of this stuff, during the work session last week with the board. Any motion?
Come on, PJ.
The motion is to accept this as is and be submitted to the
The Board of Supervisors. This will steer the staff's work. We have a motion and a second. We'll call a vote, please.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Brian.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Walter.
Yes.
Thank you. Carried. Let's see. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So
look at so eager.
We probably have comments, soft comments, and
staff comments. Thanks, Gary.
Special events ordinance went to the board supervisors. They proposed a couple of amendments, and it was viewed that they were substantive changes. One of them dealt with, on the review cycle, we provided a comment that we would give three business days. They felt that maybe that should be expanded. And then two, there was a statement afterwards that it gave discretion to the director to provide more time to review, depending on what department or agency, depending on what the issues were, what the application was. And so they're trying to change that to something that is agreed upon by both parties, the applicant and the agency or the department, if it's agreed upon. So that was one change. And the second item was the penalty wasn't specifically identified because it talks about a citation. Under our statutes, it can be a fine of like $750 for noncompliance. Nonprofit, if a group did do a special event without getting a permit, there could be that civil penalty. It could be up to $1,000, I think, for repeat. It was viewed that something like 3 times the permit cost, which we're looking at a $50 permit fee, would be more appropriate. So it could be a $150 penalty for not getting a permit. And the third thing was imposed by staff. In the process we set out, it says that the applicant should really communicate with the adjacent property owners, provide evidence of what they use to communicate with regard to their plans. And we think that we still need to do a notice. So that's something that we plan on doing. We could do that administratively or we could amend it. I think to amend it.
I have a question. So if they want to amend the so let's say the civil penalty, right, it was
whatever it was, and then it escalates, right? And did the board feel that was too much, and they just said it should be no more than three times the fee? I mean, was that their...
To be honest with you, I think part of it was a confusion about... It wasn't spelled out what the fee amount was for the penalty, because it says there's a citation process, and that's set out in a different chapter, what that really means.
Because honestly, if I'm looking at it and saying, oh, I want to have wedding receptions in my barn and I charge $2,000, well, now I'm going to charge $2,150, and I can still do it every week if I want to, and I just paid the fee.
Right.
Instead of it being a $50, permission fee, it'll be a $150. Too bad I didn't get your permission fee.
But doesn't that apply to a lot of things?
It does, but honestly, I mean, if it was $50 the first time, $100 the second time, and it escalated to $1,000 or something, then, you know, it needs to be... the whole essence of a fine is to be discouraging, right?
But and then part of it, though, for a special event, to actually require a $750 for a nonprofit to pay that, to me, seems a little excessive. So I kind of see both sides.
If it's an inadvertent thing, right, then there's discretion there, and it's a first-time offense or whatever is a repetitive, deliberate ignoring, then there needs to be recourse. That's my only question about the change, is that there needs to be a mechanism in place for
repeat
punishment or severe discouragement.
We'll talk to the county attorney's office.
I mean, if there's some sort of a legal or a civil remedy that happens upon escalation, then maybe we just say upon escalation it'll be, you know, repeat deliberate is escalated to city attorney's office, and then you find a remedy. But there needs to be something there so that it doesn't just get built into the cost of doing business.
We'll talk to them about it.
Otherwise, there should be no fine, and just say, please get a permit.
You said it was three of the changes were substantive. Does that mean we have to hear it again?
It's going to come back. That's why I'm telling you it's coming back to the Planning and Zoning Commission on the February meeting. Okay. And then the last thing I have to say is we're hiring a planner, and we're interviewing starting tomorrow. Hooray!
Very cool.
Great.
All right. Commission comments.
Yes.
First of all, before I say anything, I respect everybody's opinions, but I don't want to get into discussion about this. I just want to point this out because tonight, we need two different things here. We approved two borrow bids, and they're taking out thousands of trees in the Elvis project. Probably 25 acres. That's prime agricultural land. Wet. That's okay. But try to take out a few acres for development. That's not. It's just where I get confused. That's just my
point. If I can say, though, with the borrow, that's why we built that into the condition that we try to communicate with the state on a mitigation plan, because, like I said, our county attorney said that. No exemption for the state.
Thousands of trees coming out of there.
I know.
I think it's a dumb plan. I don't think it needs to be done, but that's beside the point. So I understand that things have to be constructed, but I just thought we had two things tonight. One, we absolutely had no problem with them, even moving a creek, let alone protecting it. There's no erosion protection down there at all. Anyway, it just seemed kind of odd. Just one point out.
Other comments?
I
things don't always fit, do they?
Is there a motion to?
Yes. Part of it is the designation on the comp plan. There's similarities. The one is in the Ames River Fringe. I forget the full definition, but there's a connection to ag, rural service. The other one is mostly in a natural resource area. So there's similarities, but they're not the same.
No, I'm not trying to change them. I'm just pointing out how that's really not. Some 10,000 acres of farm ground.
Any other comments? Motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
And a second? I'll take that as a second.
Yes.
We stand adjourned.
Thank you.
That's all.